Hey, Unchained listeners. As you know, it's hard keeping up with the fast-paced world of crypto, so we've got just the thing for you. Subscribe to our free Unchained Daily newsletter at unchainedcrypto.substack.com. You'll get the latest crypto news and original articles from our reporters, as well as summaries of other happenings in bullet points, plus our meme of the day, all curated and written by our amazing team. It's still your no-hype resource for all things crypto, just in newsletter form. Sign up at unchainedcrypto.substack.com. Again, the URL is unchainedcrypto.substack.com. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Unchained, your no-hype resource for all things crypto. I'm your host, Laura Shin. Unchained held a little giveaway recently for some of the swag we got or produced in 2019, and we are announcing our giveaway winners. Rob Fox won a Ballet crypto wallet. Crypto Kai won the book Bitcoin Millionaires. Soham Bhatia won a Ballet crypto wallet sample and an Unchained rabbit hole sticker. Ed Rod won our old school cap. Stephen Applegate won a black Unchained crypto rabbit hole shirt for his kids. Kiga won a gray Unchained crypto rabbit hole shirt and an Unchained rabbit hole sticker. David Orloff won the little Bitcoin book, and Carrie Ellen won an Unchained rabbit mug and a black Unchained logo sticker. Congrats to you all. And for the rest of you listeners, if you don't yet have any Unchained swag, check out our wares at shop.unchainedpodcast.com. Crypto.com, the crypto super app that lets you buy, earn, and spend crypto in one place. Get a metal MCO Visa card with up to 5% back on all your spending. Download the Crypto.com app today.
Kraken is the best exchange in the world for buying and selling digital assets. It has the tightest security, deep liquidity, and a great fee structure with no minimum or hidden fees. Whether you're looking for a simple fiat on-ramp or futures trading, Kraken is the place for you. CipherTrace cutting-edge cryptocurrency intelligence powers anti-money laundering, blockchain analytics, and threat intel. Leading exchanges, virtual currency businesses, banks, and regulators themselves use CipherTrace to comply with regulation and to monitor compliance.
Today's guest is Catherine Coley, CEO of Binance US. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello, Laura. How are you doing today?
Good. Happy New Year. I'm so glad we could finally do this chat.
2020. Can't believe it's here.
You worked for 5 years at Morgan Stanley doing foreign exchange trading in Hong Kong and London, and that was kind of what you were focused on before you got into crypto. So I was curious to hear about your transition from traditional finance to crypto. Why did you make that switch and how?
To me, it was almost inevitable. I spent 5 years really focused on the macro factors that changed how the world really operated and how people bet on different news headlines, different fundamental factors, different technical factors, and really kind of moved their weight of their own wealth around to realize how markets could be beneficial to them. So when you introduce something like a new asset class, our kind of trader brain just automatically sees something that we can buy and sell, common phrase of understanding how markets work. So we saw Bitcoin kind of come into the space. For me, it was around 2013 when hedge funds that I was covering started, you know, buying this as a PA, which is kind of your personal account, trading just to get a little glimpse of the technology. And that's really where we just began to realize that this was just going to be another asset class that we could trade. So it was very natural for me to move into crypto, and very obvious for me seeing the space itself of traditional finance, where foreign transactions, the margins were all being compressed, and understanding just the cycle that I was in, the opportunity to be on the front line of crypto was one that I had to seize.
And now that you've worked in this space for about 2 or 3 years, how would you say crypto, and I guess in particular crypto trading, compares to foreign exchange trading or more broadly to Wall Street in general?
It has the same adrenaline factors that I fell in love with when I first moved out to Hong Kong on the trading floor there, of just understanding that we are on the first and early days of this market behavior, understanding, recognizing patterns. These are all ones that don't come with decades or centuries of existing data points for us. So being able to have new New technologies be built on top of it is fascinating. Being able to see new behaviors, new, consumer behaviors take place around it is fascinating. And one that I just continue to kind of keep my eyes open and forward looking to make sure that we can build this in the best way possible.
And so tell us a little bit about how you made the transition specifically from traditional finance into crypto.
Yeah. So it was probably, it was right before Brexit was taking place, or so we thought it was taking place, when Morgan Stanley really kind of did a real quick look and said, oh no, all of our expats and 40% of our fixed income workforce, we're going to get rid of that. And it, what an opportunity that actually was for me to really lift up out of my seat and say, I can go anywhere in the world. I can do anything I want right now. What is it that I really want to learn more about? And for me, that was learning how to navigate between a traditional hedge fund macroeconomics world and that of tech. I was an early adopter of any app or technology that I could get my hands on, and I wanted to know exactly how that world worked a little bit more. So the natural gravity was to San Francisco to just kind of learn the language, understand how they think versus how I've thought in two of the largest financial centers in the world, and really kind of break it down and see where I could be a helpful citizen of that world. So I came over to Silicon Valley Bank, actually, and all my clients were these great startups. And it felt like I was sitting on the sidelines. I was watching some of my clients just do vertical growth really exciting projects they were building out and traction that they were growing. And I said, I can't sit on the sidelines anymore being a facilitator to these customers. So I said, all right, I had an alert for a while on Ripple, oddly, on LinkedIn. And finally, the day came where a job role lined up exactly with my expertise. So knocked on their door and within 2 weeks was working at Ripple. So that was the first full 2 feet dive into crypto that I took with my career.
And there you were head of XRP Institutional Liquidity?
That's correct. Yeah.
And so what did that role entail?
That role was, every aspect you can think about an asset in this market, I was involved in. So whether it was understanding XRP trading on exchanges, the global exchanges, getting the listings there, understanding who was trading this, whether it was your market makers, whether it was your retail and institutions, understanding how liquidity can grow, what type of financial products we actually needed to provide to users to make sense of this. So OTC markets were picking up people wanting like large block or tranche trades in an XRP. And then understanding just our impact on the larger crypto environment with introducing XRP and what other aspects could be built upon it. So if you think about every component that I worked on, that's really what helped me take on this next role, because anything from custody to market makers to trading liquidity to apps to OTC, I was involved in understanding who were the key players at that time.
And then, so why don't you tell us the story of how you became CEO of Binance US?
Yeah, so it wasn't a short story, but I was over in Singapore with Cumberland, which was one of the OTC desks that we worked with on the XRP side, and they're hosting one of their first big summits where they brought in the likes of Jihan, CZ, the Winklevi, Joe Lubin, all these greats of crypto that were seemingly on opposite sides of every table. They finally brought them into one room. And it was, what a spectacular opportunity to be in that room and really understand how we were going to move forward as an industry, and also recognize that some of these folks had never met in real life before. And so with that, I ended up sitting on a bus next to a guy that, it turned out to be the CFO of Binance. So Wei Zhao, I sat next to, and Zhou Wei. And we kicked it off in a way that was kind of serendipitous, and also one that once you have an opportunity where you see eye to eye with someone from different sides of the world, you kind of always hold on to that. So I stayed in touch with Wei on multitude of things. He would be asking me about different market participants, understanding what, you know, what they were thinking about or going into. And we just shared this kind of common bond and respect for the market and where we were both growing and going as, you know, stewards of the space. And so then about a year later, it actually came to fruition. So, he, you know, kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, you know, what are your thoughts around, you know, coming to Binance and where you can really add value. And to me, that was really providing that impact to my own local market in the United States. So being able to bring their global technology and package it up in a way that was useful and productive for American users was something that just was a really important part for me to really figure out how we can fix the infrastructure in the United States to accommodate users to be a part of a much larger global story.
Yeah, this is actually a theme that I want to ask you about, but first let's just cover the basics. So what is Binance US and how does it differ from Binance?
Sure. So Binance US provides a, you know, the fast and convenient way for you to bring dollars into crypto markets with a large variety of selection across the tokens that you can buy and sell. And so we have 25 tokens plus listed with dollar and USDT and BTC pairs. And we have an app available on Android and iOS. So you can do this from anywhere you are traveling around. And it's really catered for a US user, being able to provide them the compliance necessary within the US regulation, within a vetted platform that really lets people feel comfortable about being part of a global community while also knowing that they're being looked after from a US user's perspective.
So Binance previously did operate in the US and then it closed off Binance to US users and then Binance US replaced all this. Hopefully the way I've phrased this is not confusing to people. but so why was it necessary for Binance to create a separate entity for the US market?
Mostly because the US market is so unlike other markets that they were already in. If you think about just blanket marketing to a global user, that's nearly impossible. So you've got different aspects of understanding the local regulation, understanding the different consumer types, really being able to cater to that audience that really make more sense on making this a specific product for the United States. You know, that's really where we saw the need. And Binance has done a wonderful job of facilitating global economies to help this out. I mean, they think about the other regions that they're in from a fiat on-ramp perspective. They've got Binance Jersey, they've got Binance Singapore. And so spinning up these ways for getting local currency access into these global crypto markets has really been an important factor for Binance to kind of progress in this space. And so for us in the United States, this was the opportunity to bring US dollars and fiat on-ramps into you know, a regulated entity that would be up to par for the everyday American user.
So Binance famously launched in the summer of 2017 and then became the number one crypto exchange by the end of the year. Binance US is launching during a really different time, not during, you know, the crazy mania or a market that's similar to the crazy mania of 2017. It's more of a downturn. And also, of course, you have a lot of the regulatory restrictions that the original Binance did not have. So for Binance US, how do you plan to counteract some of these headwinds?
There's no better time than the present now. We've had almost 10 years of learning how exchanges and marketplaces in the United States have been operating. So for us to be able to come in and understand what has worked already and what hasn't worked, our consumers right now and customers are really, really opinionated in what does and does not work for them. So one of the big components of Binance US is that we really are listening and building for our users here in the US. There's something that I think is very helpful for our team, but also, you know, quite humbling. And that's, be careful what you wish for is often what we say, because we'll build stuff that we hear our customers needing. This is a time where they actually know what products they want, are understanding where the burden and the hurdles were earlier. And we're really here to lower those barriers to entry, to really include more people into, this digital era, rather than exclude them or complicate the process anymore.
Binance is operational, I believe, in all except 12 of the states. And those 12 states are some of the big states like New York, Texas, and Florida. I'm curious to hear what your take is on regulation in the U.S.
Yeah, it was pretty hard to realize that I was going to be building something from scratch and not able to provide it to any of my existing network back home.
recognizing you're from Florida,
I grew up in Florida. I went to school in North Carolina. My sister's in New York. So for realizing that, those big hit home states for me, I didn't have a home court advantage for sure, but the great aspect is we were able to get up and running in 37 states in the U.S., operating and being able to provide our services. The states that are remaining, and I get this question actually every day, when is my state going to be listed? And we're going through the process of the money transmission licenses that is a requirement for anyone to be able to conduct this style of business in the 50 states. So when we realize that our peers and of the industry have had 7 years advantage of getting these licenses in place before they're able to operate, we're definitely playing catch up in that aspect. And people need to realize that it's a long process to go through, but one that we're really excited about doing, because then that lets us really have a little bit more autonomy in the business we can provide to our users. So hang tight, but also I think it's wonderful that we've had the regulators be able to see now what these businesses are. There's a little less skepticism of are they profitable and productive businesses to run a marketplace for digital assets? So the state regulators, this isn't the first time they're seeing our business plan. It's a common practice by now for them to be able to look at these businesses, know the risks, ask the right questions, understand, what standards we need to be holding and what value we're really adding to their state. So I'm pretty excited for being able to roll those out, when the time comes. But it's wonderful to just also hear the roar from those states of how vibrant their crypto communities are and how much demand there is for our app or other features that Binance US has on our trading platform.
But do you feel that going state by state is more onerous than it needs to be? Like if you could change something about US regulation, particularly around this issue, what would you want to see?
I mean, I've always wanted to make someone else's job easier than it is. But I think they're doing a great job in terms of understanding what they need to be comfortable with. And of course, time will tell. I say they've had 7 years to understand what a crypto marketplace looks like, but that's only 7 years. That doesn't make an expert out of anyone. So we're still really in this state of evolution of understanding what regulation is necessary to keep consumer protection, to really follow up and make sure these are sound businesses and the protections are all in place for the marketplace itself. But at the same time, where can we allow this innovation to grow? Where can we recognize that there are a slew of jobs that could be opened up when these states really recognize that we can be operational there. I think we're seeing it more and more. The reason for people being based tech-wise out in California is oftentimes just because the regulation does allow for you to take part in businesses sooner. And so some of these states, I think it's exciting to see them welcome innovation. And with that, we want to reward them for opening their doors.
So going back to that very fast growth period that I mentioned that Binance experienced when it launched, part of its success came from the fact that, first of all, it launched as a crypto-to-crypto exchange, and also that it mostly played regulatory arbitrage, kind of sometimes avoiding regulations in certain countries that would be pretty onerous. Other times, especially more recently, going after jurisdictions that are more crypto-friendly, especially to establish these fiat on-ramps. But obviously, Binance, I don't think, can follow the exact same playbook to grow its market share. So what is your strategy there?
Yeah, I mean, we're here really able to cater to the U.S. user. And that to us is one that is a different playbook than we've seen before with Binance. You recognize some of the perks or features that would be on an exchange that globally would be allowed are not necessarily the same that you'll see in the U.S. But the burdens that a U.S. user has, whether it's taxes, whether it is, KYC and understanding market regulation, if we can make those features easier and more seamless for our users, then they can start beginning to participate in that kind of global phenomenon or beyond phenomenon, global industry that is crypto. So, I think it's great to recognize what has worked really well on a global scale. And then it's my job to translate that and understand how we can cater and build it for the US. And that's, we're taking that head on.
And when you talk about the U.S. customer, obviously within the U.S., there is a range of different customers, and we're seeing some of the other exchanges like Coinbase, cultivate different segments of the market. So who is your target customer or who are your target customers?
Target customers, you're right. I think there is not one customer, and that's something that I often worry about is the generalization of who's using crypto. But the idea that we have not only a wealth of capital markets and able investors from an institution side, whether they're waiting on the sidelines for more clarity or they're just trying to understand this market before they dive in, they're still here and based largely in the U.S., whether it's Chicago, New York, or even West Coast. There's some serious amounts of capital here that are active traders in capital markets that could see this as a very, plausible next step for them. The other aspect, if you break it down, are people that are crypto native or this is their first foray or their second foray into day trading and a routine awareness of these markets. We're really aware of what they need. And that's a lot more than the brand new customer they would need in a crypto market. Those guys are already advanced in trading in the futures, wanting to see more products, more order types, more charts, et cetera. Versus a new customer is just maybe beginning to learn how to dabble. What is it like to hold it? What is it like to feel that risk in your hand of understanding that the price does go up, the price does go down? How can you monitor that? How can you access it quickly and not be burdened by a huge amount of fees just learning about the technology? So we've broken it up in a way that we can provide an easy on-ramp for first-time users. We've got a one-click buy-sell on our homepage. So you can just say, I want to spend dollars and buy Bitcoin to an amount, click, go, you've got it. It sits in your wallet. You can monitor that every day, watch it, trade it across 25 pairs. That's a really easy system for folks that are just wanting to get in, learn about the markets, and go from there. The next kind of stage that we offer is our basic and advanced trading platform on our website. And that really breaks it down. You've got trading view charts, you've got more technical analysis available. You've also got, that's where you're going to be leaving market orders. That's where you're going to be really engaging with the market, understanding their order book, understanding the order depth. And that's familiar to a lot of folks that fell in love with how simple it was, but also how straightforward it was from a trading perspective. And then you bring both of those components into an app form, and that allows us for the mobile customer. I think about most of the United States, most of the world right now is really on the go. So if you've got a mobile component, that's really how we're able to cater to our users that are going to be checking this, whether it's me late at night, I can close my laptop now and just have my phone near my bed. Probably not good behavior, but, or you can have it, on your way to class, on your way to, I've had truck drivers message me on Twitter that said, I can't bring my desktop with me on the road and I love trading crypto while I'm, hopefully not while driving, but maybe at a rest stop. Definitely not while driving, but,
I'm a pedestrian, so please don't touch your phone while you drive.
I hope you're not crossing highways anytime soon. But the aspect of crypto just allows you to have this added layer of financial freedom that can be on top of your day job, can be on top of your, education components. It's just another way to let you participate in a global market and really own and take control of your own capital. And that to me is just something that is profound in markets. We've traditionally had huge hurdles to entry, in accredited investors had to be a certain threshold. I remember every day while at Morgan Stanley, like just begging to become an accredited investor. I just thought it was so funny that I worked and facilitated some of the largest, money managers around the world. And yet myself, I was still boxed out given I was, 2 years out of college. Those components to me, that discrepancy of inequality was just kind of striking. And I understand that there are good barriers to entry, as in education first, so that you understand what you're trading. But there doesn't have to be that penalty for fees. It shouldn't cost you 1% to take a leap into a new technology. It should be paying you 1%, frankly, to try something out. So I think that's something that we're really just aware of as a global organization, and one that I'm really aware of for the United States, given that inequality is tangible. I think about the number of peers I have that actually dove into capital markets, and I was one of thousand that went into sales and trading, and definitely one of my only peer set of women that dove into crypto. Fortunately, it's such a ecosystem where I found great other peers that are like-minded, and we all get to kind of revel in the fact that we're a little bit rebellious, a little bit forward-thinking, and definitely stubborn enough to continue to fight for this. So I think there's a nice camaraderie with people that do take the risks, but we need to make it less intimidating, less frightening, less scary to understand. And that's really what Binance US and the larger Binance has done wonderfully.
And one other question about this transition. I was just curious if you had any data on how the switch affected usage of Binance in a broad sense in the US. Was trading volume from US customers, obviously went after that left Binance. Do you feel like now you have the same level of trading volume on Binance US, or do you feel like people moved off to other platforms?
When we launched with 7 coins only. We launched in late September 2019. So I'll hold you to the fact that if Binance started in June, they had a 3-month lead on us, but they also had a different environment that they were launching in. So we started in September with 7 coins and then grew that to about 27 quickly within our first 100 days of trading. So that really allowed us to bring in folks that felt isolated when they realized it was only 7 coins going to be listed. One of the benefits of Binance is it's always been, open-minded in the aspect of providing a diverse selection of token offerings. It's not there to be a gatekeeper of what you should and should not trade. It's really just providing that freedom of choice. And that's something we definitely believe in as well. But we run through, understanding of the US regulation, we run through a digital asset risk assessment framework. And that's a much, tedious process, 75 point checklist to go through each token before we list it. So we kind of put out our list of what we're exploring, and then we spend our time exploring those. And when they pass the framework, we list them.
Can you summarize kind of the top line points that you're looking for in a coin before you list it?
Sure. The aspects that you really need to understand from it are, yes, A, their ability to not be a security, understand where they are from a trading liquidity perspective, community perspective. Is there a US user growth? Is this a US targeted project? Understanding how the facilitation of providing liquidity from the US dollar perspective would be beneficial to the ecosystem that it's growing. And then as well, what is the component that this is adding to the American access for crypto. So I see us continuing. We've got another list of about 20 or 18 tokens that we are exploring. And I continue to see more listings be something that's positive for the American user, but one that we're also recognizing, there's less volume trading on these smaller coins. So how can we still maintain adequate liquidity on our platform so that people are, incentivized to come to a healthy market rather than one that's quite dry or illiquid. So I think there are components that we've heard good feedback so far of, more BTC pairs. one of the aspects, as you said, Binance launched was crypto to crypto only. So when we consider people that are now using dollars as their on-ramp, that might not be the same audience member that you had on a Bitcoin to another altcoin pair trading. So we have to really remember that there's a life cycle of a trader that might be crypto to crypto or might be fiat to crypto, and we need to bridge that for both of them.
All right. In a moment, we're going to discuss more about regulatory issues. Of course, you guys, I'm sure you knew that I was going to probably really zone in on that. But anyway, first, a quick word from the sponsors who make this show possible.
Will the world follow France and advocate banning privacy coins? Will government-backed stablecoins become the new fiat? Are distributed and peer-to-peer exchanges just a flash in the pan? The answer is maybe. Virtual currencies can flourish and create a new, private, and more versatile economy. But that grand vision can't happen without keeping crypto clean. And that requires support of governments and accountability for bad actors. Privacy-enhanced compliance using cryptographic controls has the potential to preserve anonymity without compromising legitimate investigations. CipherTrace is working on this vision of the future. Sign up to stay up to date on the Privacy-Enhanced Compliance Initiative and receive authoritative crypto AML reports quarterly. www.ciphertrace.com/keepcryptoclean. Today's episode is brought to you by Kraken. Kraken is the best exchange in the world for buying and selling digital assets. With all the recent exchange hacks and other troubles, you want to trade on an exchange you can trust. Kraken's focus on security is utterly amazing. Their liquidity is deep, and their fee structure is great, with no minimum or hidden fees. They even reward you for trading, so you can make more trades for less. If you're a beginner, you will find an easy on-ramp from 5 fiat currencies. And if you're an advanced trader, you'll love their 5x margin and futures trading. To learn more, please go to kraken.com. That's KRAKEN.com.
Crypto.com sees a future of cryptocurrency in every wallet. Have you seen the MCO Visa card? Loaded with perks, including up to 5% back on all your spending and unlimited airport lounge access. They pay for your Spotify and Netflix too. What's not to love? With Crypto.com, not only can you spend your crypto, but you can grow it too. Earn up to 6% per year on the most popular coins like BTC, ETH, XRP, and up to 12% per year on stable coins. Crypto.com has recently launched its exchange and crypto fundraising platform, The Syndicate. There is a 50% off stellar listing event on January 15th, 2020. Sign up on the exchange now and stay tuned for more listings. Back to my conversation with Catherine Coley of Binance US. When you launched, why did you choose Tether as your stablecoin?
We chose Tether as our stablecoin, as largely it was one of the largest stablecoins in the market being traded. We understood that a lot of the users globally enjoyed moving their, you know, whether it was profits or taking themselves out of a trading market into stablecoins. USDT was you know, broadly adopted. And so that's, you know, really one of the components that was early on that we factored in. I do see us involving more around BUSD. BUSD is a stablecoin that can be listed on what's listed on all the Binance exchanges, but also on a good slew of other exchanges out there. And still will just allow for one-to-one conversion and really allow for an easy way to have skin in the game, but maybe not in a volatile asset. So I think that's an important step for people to understand, is that moving your funds into a digital asset that is a stablecoin is a great progress and a great step that you're taking. If you're not comfortable yet understanding, you know, or deciding which pair you want to be investing in or trading around.
And I was also, you know, just since we were discussing regulatory issues, I was curious, has Binance US applied yet for a BitLicense?
So we're in the process of applying for all of the states that we're missing. So that's the 13 there. So going through the steps of preparing for those applications and understanding, you know, the steps that we need to take from both, you know, an internal perspective, but also a market and external perspective, going through all those steps for every single one of them. So that's all I'll tell you now. It's quite an arduous process, but one that we take very seriously. It's being led by Chris Robbins and our DC office, who has an extensive regulatory and legal background specific to getting these licenses for digital asset companies. And so it's, you know, we're in great hands for that process, but one that is, it's extensive. You know, it is really something that you have to think through clearly. And there's a reason why you see companies leaving the US. It's not a, you know, it's not an easy space to just pop up and begin business. But we knew that going into it, and you know, we're not giving up fighting. We've only just begun.
And they've actually proposed some changes to the BitLicense. I think just from a high level, one is that for exchanges that operate in the state, they'll be able to list any coins that the regulator approves for listing in New York, and then also the New York Department of Financial Services will publish a model framework for coin listings that exchanges should follow. What do you think of these proposed changes?
I mean, it's fantastic. The more clarity that we get around regulation and more guidance just shows that they're understanding our process even more. So I think the most that we can do is just teach them our business, share with them what we're working on, come and meet in the middle of the road of where their concerns are and what we can do to address those head on. You know, we've run through, as I mentioned, that digital asset risk assessment framework is one that we, you know, vet through seriously and are able to, kind of, it reminds me of math class of like proving your work, show the work that we've done in order to be comfortable listing these items, or tokens on our platform. So a lot of what regulation entails is just showing that you've done the work in order to do the business. And that's what we're really here to show our work, to do what we're thinking, or we've constantly have our consumer in mind, because I'm one of them.
And you mentioned Christopher Robbins, who leads your legal and regulatory team. One other thing that you have done on the regulatory front is you recently joined the Chamber of Digital Commerce's executive committee. And I just wondered, you know, it seems like obviously regulation is a focus for you guys. If you could present a wish list to regulators and lawmakers, what would you put on it?
I have a wish list, but I, you know, I was waiting till next week to share that with them. the components that we really want people to come into this space when they are looking to be, you know, the authority in it is understanding where both the consumer and these companies are coming from in terms of the products we can provide folks. The ability to let American users compete in a global marketplace is really an advantage for the US itself. You're able to not hold back your customers or your citizens from partaking and understanding what is affecting the world at large. So the aspects of pain points that naturally drive people towards using crypto as a solution don't necessarily affect us directly in the US, given that we don't change currencies between state lines. But when you recognize that every flight out of Singapore is an international one, and you can't use your same currency anytime you land in an airplane, that's when you recognize that there is a significant advantage to cryptocurrencies and this component that allows for a digital representation of value as we know it. So I think that the components of understanding the pain points and the benefits on a global scale, and then bringing that into why the US still needs to be an active participant in this industry, is a really important one. And one I've spent my whole life doing, being a translator for on the ground, understanding, you know, a global market and bringing that into why it's relevant in to a US user. So I'm familiar with, you know, navigating the unknown and providing a digestible answer to people who may never ever see what is over on other sides of the world. And that's something that I really think that we're in the right place here with Binance US.
Well, this is actually what I was curious about, because I saw, it's obvious if you look at Binance's strategy overall, but you know, they have this very like global strategy, in the sense like you can tell that they see these kind of like global financial markets in the future. And I saw Multicoin Capital had a report on how Binance is blitzscaling, as they called it. And one of the lines in it was, Binance is competing to be the centerpiece in a global open financial system. So, you know, when I was looking at that and thinking about Binance US, I was just wondering, like, where does Binance US fit in? Is it being excluded from that global open financial system?
No, not at all. I think we're just catering towards, I mean, you could call the US a global open financial system inside of the US borders, practically. You know, there's an insane amounts of, I call it like topography within the US of various user types, various understandings of sophistication of market products. And that to us is the bubble or the world that we get to work inside of. What I get to make sure is that that product and that community is not left behind. So we have a fascinating aspect. They're called Binance Angels, and they're really just global volunteers that want to be, you know, committed to updating everyday users about our products, or understanding, or helping facilitate an understanding of how Binance can really cater to the needs of individuals all over the world. And so we have that component already in the US as well, with the Binance Angels, just being able to welcome all types of folks through with our community channel, understanding their pain points, even understanding, you know, how does this work? I don't understand it. You know, the ability to listen to people from all walks of life is best when you're building it with everyone in mind. So for us at Binance US, I mean, I think one of the fun components is our team is really made up of what we see right now in the United States. So, you know, whether it's welcoming, you know, diversity of thought, perspective, or background, whether it's really just addressing, you know, the different model of who we see coming into crypto, we're building that as a component within our own team and within our own product. And that's something that the blitz scaling you mentioned, I mean, what, 400 plus employees in 40 countries? That's an amazing advantage when you've got that amount of perspective being able to be behind the product.
Well, but so then how will Binance US be connected to the wider world of things going on in Binance? Like, will the US customers just be trading with each other? Or, you know, I mean, well, let me ask maybe like a more specific question around this. I noticed like in CZ's 2020 New Year's message, he had this little section on degrees of decentralization. And in one of them, he full on admitted, quote, Binance Chain / DEX is definitely less decentralized than Ethereum. And as some examples, he said that the code is not open source and there are a limited number of validator nodes. But so, for instance, you know, Binance here is working on this Binance DEX. But then is it hard for Binance US to offer things that could be closely tied to that DEX? Like, you know, could you list the BTCB token that they have on Binance DEX, which is essentially a token that's pegged to the value of BTC, just so people can easily trade cryptocurrencies that are not on the Binance chain? Like, could you offer that?
I mean, it's certainly something that we can look into. One of the benefits of being a local partner to a global partner that is Binance is the technology that they're building, we're able to license and use and provide for our users. So every day, practically, when Binance builds something new, it's kind of another component that I can factor into our product here in the US. So that's really how we see the benefit of a US market being able to still take place with a global ecosystem. So understanding whether it is components of Binance Academy, or you know, we see their growth of you know, DEX with futures, with lending, with staking, like all of those components in the build out that Binance is working on, we absolutely can process and bring in. It's just up to us to make sure that we're doing it in a way that is within the US regulation, with the US user in mind. And that will build that bridge between someone that is a Binance US app user, someone that's a Binance.com user. They'll have a lot more things in common than they think, but they're both protected in their right ways of where they're operating. So I think that's more of this global phenomenon that I see is a huge benefit of Binance, and it's a huge benefit of Bitcoin. It's something that we're bridging the barriers that people have normally had and why things have been unknown. And so if you can have a common bond around the world based on the fact that you trade your digital assets on something that is, you know, black and gold, that's more common of a bond that you had than you had 10 years ago. And I think there's something fantastic about finding similarities around the world in a scope of diversity that really crypto itself has done wonders for. And we need to preserve that narrative instead of celebrate, you know, the alienating one or the, you know, division of tribalism. There's something far more beautiful about being able to understand that you've got the best trading technology in the United States, and you also have the best trading technology in a global arena. You are not left behind. You're understanding these markets crisply. You can really gain a lot of awareness around how the rest of the world is working.
One other aspect of work that Binance is doing that looks like it could bump up against some of the regulations here in the U.S. centers around the BNB token, which looks like it could be classified as a security in the U.S. Just going by the Howey test, I think people could argue that it is an investment contract in a common enterprise with profits dependent on a third party, which in this case would be Binance. So I know that Binance US does enable people to use the BNB token. So how did you determine that BNB was safe to use here on Binance US?
Yeah, I mean, just like any other token that we listed, we went through our digital asset risk assessment framework, which is, you know, 75 points of understanding how this token would be both available for our U.S. users and compliant within our measures for maintaining U.S. regulations. So, you know, with comfort, we've been able to see the benefit of BNB offering trading discounts for our users. And I think there's an additional amount of utility that we see BNB providing, whether it's down the line with Binance Charity Foundation and other aspects where we can really build in and build upon the utility that we see with the chain itself. You've seen countless projects build on top of it. You've seen it be super useful in terms of a payments mechanism as well. So I think there's just a, you know, people can argue many, many sides of it. We're comfortable with it through our digital asset risk assessment framework. And, you know, we'll always be evaluating and reevaluating the coins we've listed to make sure that they're still within our digital asset risk assessment framework based on the regulation at the time. But regulatory clarity is an evolving process, and we are, you know, as you know, keenly listening and in the right conversations in DC, and also part of the Chamber of Digital Commerce to make sure that we can ensure the acceptance and the use of digital assets in the US.
Yeah, just looking at the data points, which are few and far between, but at least some already exist. Obviously, we saw what happened with Kik and its kin cryptocurrency. And I would classify this as an example of a token that was very closely associated with a company where the SEC, you know, pretty much said very clearly, like, you know, this is a scenario where it would fit the Howey test. Recently, we also saw with Telegram, they published a blog post where they also very clearly dissociated themselves from the Gram cryptocurrency, even to the point of saying that this notice superseded anything that was in the white paper. And some of the things they said in that blog post were that Telegram will have no control over the TUN network and that the TUN wallet will not be integrated with the Telegram messenger service. And so I just wondered, you know, when you see these developments, does that at all give you pause about the BNB token?
No.
And why not?
It's a scenario by scenario case. You know, I think each time you see an example or a case made, it's appropriate to evaluate it at that point. But these are all, you know, part of the process going forward. I'm still comfortable with our assessment.
All right. In October, several exchanges came together to form the Crypto Rating Council. Some people on Twitter, especially, of course, smirked at the idea of such a council. They seemed to indicate that they thought it was a conflict for the exchanges and that the exchanges could not be impartial judges of whether or not a token is a security. What do you think of the idea of the council, and is Binance US interested in joining?
Yeah, that launched right after we had opened our doors, so we were not involved in any of those conversations. And I think that's, it's always interesting to be the outside man, and one that we're comfortable with our own measures for following the framework and working with regulators. I think that the amount of detail we have in our framework is, one that is what I'm proud of. That amount of scrutiny that we go through for each project is not trivial. And so the components that I found difficult with the CRC was around the limited explanations that they had for the rating, and then the bullet points to follow up just seemed a little bit light for how serious we take assessing tokens. So I'm fully confident in those teams individually being good stewards of the market, and I think that they probably had the best intentions going through with this. But it's one where we see there being strength in individually being excellent at reviewing your tokens versus ganging up.
Binance is also offers services like margin trading, and it's actually quite popular there with 45% of users on Binance engaging in margin trading. What would need to happen for Binance US to be able to offer margin trading?
Well, a lot, but components that every day we're working on trying to, as I kind of said, translate these attractive products from a global perspective to a US market and a US user. So really breaking it down to what is the component that people are excited about in margin trading, and how can we factor that into current licensing requirements, regulation in the US. Aspects of a futures market are entirely different in the US as well as on a global scale. And we see that with, you can't translate global futures matching engines into the same element in the US. Goes through a clearinghouse with an FCM. They're components that are just built differently. And we're aware of all those factors. So that's something that we just factor into our recipe and go forward.
And Binance has also started offering lending. Is that something Binance US is looking into?
I got another component. You kind of look at the laundry list that Binance.com has, and I kind of salivate like a kid in a candy store, realizing what I can bring to the US user. I just have to prioritize where it fits in with regulatory ease and access, and really what's right now for the US to gain access. I think I'm always aware that if you create a extremely complicated product early on, you won't be able to cater to a larger market. And one of the components that is, one-on-one on healthy markets is being able to have adequate liquidity. So, catering to the niche 0.001% of crypto users really is still at a disadvantage this early on into understanding these markets. So, we're building things out in a method that we think is appropriate for getting the most kind of broad scale of US users familiar, comfortable with our platform, with our app, with our trading pairs, and then being able to kind of bring them with this journey of where they want us to go as well. So the need for lending or even a product that has yield has been a huge component that we've seen very attractive when people cannot, time alpha as well as they need in a market. So being able to earn yield on a passive amount of crypto holdings is a fantastic product, one that I definitely see down the line as something we'd want to be offering to our users, because it makes sense as something counter to the traditional markets, which would be holding your money in cash, earning nothing, not understanding the benefits of compound interest.
And what about the Binance Launchpad? Is that something you ever see Binance US offering, or, you know, offering something similar?
Something similar. I mean, you think about the breakdown of kind of IEOs in the US, and if they've, the pendulum has kind of swung both ways. You've seen it go highly popular to highly unpopular to maybe coming back in the middle of the road. So really assessing where we are with regulation, where we are with the comfort of the market, and what's the appetite for new coins to be, you know, launched onto an exchange. I think that are really all the factors we consider. And so it's something that, again, on the cards, but probably for Q1, I mean, when we first launched, a large part of what we were working on was just getting us up to par where we were with our peers. So getting an app was a huge, you know, a huge moment for us to be able to now provide a mobile solution for our users. I can't believe we launched with just a desktop and 7 coins. You know, that's night and day different to what we are right now, which is kind of incredible when you think it's only been, you know, roughly 100 days since we've been alive. But
and how many people are you?
We're 9.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we're a scrappy group. I think that's one of our benefits and advantages, though, is that having a nimble team that is catered specifically to the excellence of this product. We are keenly listening to our users, building in real time based on their feedback, you know, being able to target and address each aspect that we need to build in a way that is as fast as Binance does operate. I mean, they're the components that make Binance wonderful is that it always, it's a go-getter. You know, I wanted to be a part of a story that was a doer. I'm as much of a dreamer as well, but doing things and making things happen is something that is a wonderful feeling. And CZ's team and the effort that they do and the way that they just constantly build and reiterate and iterate and ship products, it's remarkable. And it's unlike anything else I've seen. So, you know, being able to be a part of that story and learning how the ecosystem has evolved within 2 years to be where they are, that's an incredible energy to be a part of. And one that we definitely embody here in our team. You know, we're based in San Francisco and DC. We come from the likes of previous fintech. I kind of always am looking for people that have had a couple tours of duty, whether it's, you know, we've got Robinhood, Western Union, Bitflyer, EY Blockchain, SoFi. Like all of my team has seen one rotation from the traditional to the innovative. And now we're on our kind of second or third turn to really know how we can better deliver products, better, you know, cater to the users, really having a keen ear to what people need.
Coinbase has begun offering custody for institutions and staking. Do you see Binance US also offering similar services in the future?
You know, one of the things that we really do pride ourselves on as well is freedom of choice. So not being there's a benefit to being a one-stop shop. That certainly is what the institutions adore with having, you know, prime brokers do everything for you. And that's something that crypto never offered. It kind of democratized the prime brokerage model, which made them a little uncomfortable because they didn't want to do that much work. And I don't blame them. They're trading, you know, tons of assets and huge volumes. You don't have time to, you know, log into your Nano and click a bunch of buttons. But the elements that I find most exciting is that there are other institutional custody providers out there that are excelling in the space. And for us to compete directly with them, I think would be just a little bit of a time waste on our part. So where I see this kind of evolving is that we provide a freedom of choice for people to custody their solutions at these various providers, but then be able to leverage the liquidity of Binance US itself. So we've partnered with Tagomi in that aspect for institutional clients that want to trade in the ways that they ideally would like to, but access the liquidity and the coins that we provide through our system. So I see a similar model working in the custody component. I also recognize that institutions aren't going to keep all of their coins in one place. And so naturally, we don't want to be isolating ourselves from preventing people from having that freedom to trade with us at any time by, you know, having something locked up with someone they've got to trade there. We more or less would like to facilitate this liquidity for everyone.
For now, crypto exchanges can charge fees like 1%, but in the future, that's likely to trend down towards zero. What other forms of revenue is Binance US exploring?
I mean, you think about just in what we've seen with traditional, you know, retail equity providers with the drop to zero fees. I also, you know, having seen the margins on FX products, you think about these things called non-deliverable forwards, which are actually the way that Asian countries had to implement for currency restrictions following the Asian financial crisis. So the non-deliverable forward was the means to which you could not be able to access the local onshore markets and currencies. And that's, you know, component that has brought another product to the market. Those used to be highly illiquid and very different from the spot market on shore. And so you'd have huge spreads that you were able to capture trading those. And that's also why people didn't trade them, is because they lost, you know, there was a lot of inefficiencies in that market. I saw those spreads go down to you know, nearly nothing in 5 years of the markets. So I see that same thing happening at an accelerated rate here. We've dropped our fees to just, you know, 10 basis points. And then if you use BNB, you get 25% off of trading fees. So, you know, start your day off with, you know, really, really low trading fees. That's, we're already starting there. So, you know, additional revenue components that we can think about are elements where we see our users. Where do we provide value to them that is worth, you know, monetizing? And I think those components are going to be ever changing, and we'll see what really that value comes from it. But at the same time, we really just are focused on making sure that people have an easy access to these markets, and that we're not having a barrier to entry to make ourselves or make our business something that's preventing technology from getting in the hands of users. So it's a little bit of a different component versus the kind of Silicon Valley subsidize and then, you know, raise the price on your user. Our ethos is just different, and we can innovate upon that as we build out adoption.
You worked customer support for Binance for 3 days.
Still do.
You mentioned. Oh, you still
do. It was not
do.
3 days, by the way. It's still ongoing. So it's been about 3 months or more. How long? September is a long time ago. No, I'm still available on Twitter. You can still DM me. I'll still chat with anyone and everyone. That is if they're polite and ask questions.
What are some things you've learned from doing that? Like what are you noticing from the users and, you know, more than just like what they're requesting?
Well, right. Beyond that, it's the geography difference that I didn't know there were such vibrant communities inside of the United States in states that I wasn't even paying attention to. And so kind of refocusing on the United States is really, I'm so curious and fascinated, and a lot of what 2020 will be spent on is visiting these communities and really understanding why it's working or where this, you know, where they see the adoption of crypto benefiting their own lifestyles and communities. And I think it's just great and fascinating to see pockets of, whether it's the university blockchain graduates that go on and now are pursuing crypto in their first jobs, and understanding, you know, maybe their first paycheck isn't going to be in US dollars. Mine was in Hong Kong dollars. So that's how I had to learn about FX so quickly. You know, there's a component to which we're going to be seeing the seeds of native crypto adoption take place earlier on. And I think that's a fascinating wave to be welcoming. And so whether it's learning people who have, I love to know what their day job is sometimes. If they have a day job, if sometimes their day job is just Binance, and I'm like, go for it to the moon, trade all day. I'm here for you. But, you know, the different components that said, this is an equalizer for me. I'm able to, you know, pursue a passion of mine that might not be a financial, advantage. And therefore I can still follow the markets, take advantage of my capital, and access crypto to benefit my lifestyle or benefit my future or my generation following. So that to me is the really great component. The other one is just to enjoy that people love hoodies. I've never seen people actually, this is a true fact. I never wore a hoodie before I came to Binance, and I haven't taken mine off since I started. So I'm due for a laundry day, that's for sure. But there's something that's both comforting, but also really nice to be kind of part of a company that has such a culture and being able to bring our flair to it in the US and be able to provide something that I think people will be not only proud to be a part of, but welcoming their friends to understand so that there's, again, that common bond that we can start beginning to lower the stigma of involving in crypto, lower the stigma of financial ownership. I think we've gone miles from where we were. People discussing money was so taboo. And now I talk about money every day, like it's crypto. There's a community welcoming the ownership of your own capital, the growth and the management. That's a huge progression from where we've been. And I think that's something that is smart for the world to take awareness of. It is engaging to see how it benefits and allows for people to do more things than they have previously, being in their own financial burdens of their own societies. But that's something that's just a huge component that I enjoy chatting with people. They might not even know I'll get this philosophical with them on Twitter until it's like 4 in the morning, and I'm like, all right, guys, I got a podcast in the morning. I gotta sign off. But that's the human element to which I think I can never avoid. And I think we take for granted that we're building products for humans at this stage. And we need to make sure that they work for humans and that they are, that we are human in the process.
And last question, this is something I like to ask people who I guess have a familiarity with crypto in Asia as well. But since you run a US version of a crypto company that came out of Asia, I was curious how you would compare the crypto trading cultures between Asia and the West.
Yeah, it's fascinating localizing a product into a market that I know natively, having grown up here, but also have professionally grown up internationally. So the light bulb effects of where the pain points are a little dimmer here versus every day in Asia, you were burdened by some form of an FX rate ruining or making your day. And so I think that element of being able to provide the education in the US is super important. But there's still the, human element of enjoying when you're selling something higher than you buy it. And so that component is, universal. The other elements are around kind of the referrals or the promotion or how fast things can spread. You think about just how viral Asia is as a community, where trends can be set and spread so quickly. Given the concentration and the density of their cities, given the the appetite in the awareness of tech and mobile e-commerce that exists outside of the U.S., so I think those are things that are such an advantage from the Asia focus. I think it's interesting to compare that in contrast with Europe as well, which is a different beast on its own. And one in the US that I take as well is that, being the home for people's digital asset trading is a common, we're creating a comfortable space for them to know that we are, building it exactly the way they want. And that customization is something that a US market really does care about. We have a plethora of variety for people to choose from, but they want to choose the one that fits how they operate exactly. And so that's really something that is a focus for us in the US, is catering our product to exactly the needs of an American user. Whether that is, you know, natively our app is in dark mode, and, you know, components of, there's, you know, it's a simple, UI. You're going to be cleanly understanding what's happening. You've got, you know, really straightforward, components that are still top notch, you know, part of the technology and the tech suite of the globally leading, you know, cryptocurrency marketplace. So I think that's something that we really enjoy, but kind of can cater to, making sure that we're, you know, just keep it simple is always a nice motto for the US. And they get it, but they, with simplicity does not mean stupidity. So, you know, they do want the advanced products and features. They do want to, have more sophisticated, products available in the near time. They do want to have that diverse variety of tokens to choose from. So all of those components I celebrate, but it's pretty neat.
Great. Where can people learn more about you and Binance US?
Absolutely. So easiest place right now, we've got a couple, I call them bugles or ways that we communicate. Twitter, follow us on at Binance America. We also have a Telegram announcements channel, which is fantastic just to, we, you know, it's only the announcements that come out. So that's where you would have learned about our beta testing of our app and then our launch of our Android and our iOS app. And then any of the, you know, additional listing components come out through that channel. You can also find us on our website, binance.us. We have a blog that we keep updates on when we have, you know, new announcements of certain elements. You can follow me. I'm at Crypto Coley. My DMs are open. If you have any help or needs on the customer support, it's at Binance US Help. We'll be there to answer. So really looking forward to letting the US have finally the experience of Binance, but catered for them in the US now in their hands. So download the app on the App Store or the Google Play. We're really excited to see, you know, where these communities can grow and be a part of a much larger global story.
Great. Well, thanks so much for coming on Unchained.
Thank you so much. Really looking forward to, shout out to my listeners on United.
Thanks so much for joining us today. To learn more about Catherine and Binance US, check out the show notes inside your podcast player. Want to show your love for Unchained? Check out our t-shirts, mugs, hats, and stickers at shop.unchainedpodcast.com. Unchained is produced by me, Laura Shin, with help from Factual Recording, Anthony Yoon, Daniel Ness, Josh Durham, and the team at CLK Transcription. Thanks for listening.